Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Gwen Klingman, with another exciting show of the Milwaukee Mob. And today, we bring you the famous, good-looking W.D. Smith, a.k.a. Will Smith, the author of the great book, The Barker Carpus Gang. I'm not speaking well today, forgive me. Mr. Little Bit of Smith about Mr. Smith's background is not only might he be the direct descendant of Cocaine Bear of the great city of Kentucky, he is, by rumor and accusation by many, to be the largest moonshiner ever south of the Mason-Dixon line. So no further ado, let us bring on himself, the famous, the fantastically good-looking Will Smith. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Now, I have to ask, how do you get interested in doing a story on the Barker Carpus Gang?
Well, I had been approached about doing some card drawings about 2002-2003 by some people that were that had ties to some of the gang historians, and they were tied with a group called Gangsterology. Well, through them, I met a fellow online by the name of Rick Maddox. Now, Rick has written several books on gangster history with a fellow named Bill Helmer. And he helped me a whole lot in researching the gangster cars that were driven by people like John Dillinger, Bonnie and Clyde, and several others. And he was going to write a book on the Barker Carpus Gang, but he passed away from cancer before he was able to do this. So I've been involved in a lot of genealogy research for probably the better part of 30 years. And I've done a lot of research on various aspects of the organized crime in the South myself.
Really?
And Rick was a big inspiration, and also Tony Stewart. Tony's written several books on John Dillinger. And his great aunt was actually Burl Hovius, who was John Dillinger's wife.
Wow.
So Tony and Rick both were great inspirations to me. And I figured, you know, I'm going to try this, and I'm going to dedicate the book to Rick.
Yeah.
So I started this about, I started doing research probably a little over a year and a half ago. And I got a lot of Rick's books. One of his books, let's see, Public Enemy's Almanac, and it's still available on Amazon. I got that, and I was also able to get hold of two books written by Alvin Karpus, The Alvin Karpus Story and 25 Years on the Rock. And those books were critical to the, you know, to me writing, to me facing this book. And also, there's a lot of FBI records, the Bremer kidnap files. There are literally thousands of pages just on the Barker Carpus Gang and their involvement with the kidnapping of Edward Bremer in 1933. And there's so much information in there that I could probably write another 10 books and still not cover it all.
Sure. I mean, they're very, very fascinating people.
Yeah. Yeah, these folks come out of the Ozarks. It was George Elias Barker and Arizona Donnie Clark. They were married in the 1893 in Missouri. They had four sons: Herman, Lloyd, Arthur, whose nickname was Doc Barker, and Fred Barker, Frederick George Barker. And along about 1903, the whole family packed up and moved to Joplin. Well, George, he worked long hours in the mines there in the Joplin area. And Ari, of course, you know, she had to take care of the boys and stuff, but she was overly permissive. And she pretty much let them do what they wanted to do as long as they didn't get caught.
Oh, wow.
And when they got in trouble, she would fly off the handle. And George would try to discipline them and try to make a mind, but she'd fly off the handle at him. She wouldn't let anybody discipline her kids, and when they got in trouble, she would accuse them, the people who their victims, she'd accuse them of lying and persecuting her boys. Well, in 1915, Herman got in trouble for highway robbery. And she went to the courtroom, and she raised such ruckus that they frankly just got tired of listening to her, and they released Herman back into her. And she put her foot down with George, says, "We're leaving Tulsa. Or, no, we're leaving for Tulsa," because her stepdad and mother had already moved to Tulsa by then. Said, "We're leaving. No question about it. They're persecuting my boys. They're marked." And he just threw up his hands and said, "Well, ain't no use arguing with her."
Mm.
So they packed up and they moved to Tulsa. Well, from there, they got up with a bunch of hoodlums called the Central Park Gang. And most of the people involved in that gang were later members of the Barker Carpus Gang. Now, Fred, he wound up going to prison in 1921. He got sent to reform school he wound up Kansas State Penitentiary, and that's where he met Alvin Carpus. But now Herman, he continued to get in trouble, and he got with two other little hoodlums, Henry Stallcup and Porter Clay Meek. They went up to Newton, Kansas, to the ice plant up there. And they robbed the ice plant. And on their way back south, they went through Wichita. Well, now, they were already looking for Herman anyway, because he had been involved in the murder of a sheriff in Pine Bluffs, Wyoming, on the 1st of August of 1927. This robbery took place in Newton, Kansas, took place on the 28th, the night of the 28th and 29th of August. And they were coming back through town in a stolen car, and there's two motorcycle cops got after them. And Herman shot and killed one of the cops, and his partner returned fire and mortally wounded Herman. So he got away. Porter Mix bailed out of the car and took off. And Herman continued to drive on until he got a few blocks later. He hit a tree, stumbled out of the car, and shot and killed himself.
Oh, wow.
So he was the first one to die. Of course, Harry flew off the handle and just said, well, they murdered him. He would never have shot himself. He didn't do half the stuff that they say he did.
good.
Of course, you know, she was living in her own little world and her kids could do no wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and a few years before that, her other boy, Scott Barker, well, her second son, Lloyd, I'll begin with him. Lloyd went up to Baxter Springs, Kansas, and he robbed the mail truck up there. Well, he got sent to Leavenworth, because that's a federal crime, mm-hmm. robbing the mail. He got sent to Leavenworth, sentenced 25 years in prison. So that put him on ice. He was never involved with any of their activities.
Mm-hmm.
After that, because, you know, he was locked up. Okay, Doc. He had murdered him and Vonnie Davis, who was also later on involved with members of the Dillinger gang. But Vonnie Davis and Doc and some other boys tried to rob the payroll office at a new hospital, St. John's Hospital in Tulsa, that was under construction. Well, they were surprised by the night watchman, Mr. Cheryl, and they shot and killed him. Well, they eventually figured out, you know, who was involved in it, and he was sent. Doc just barely missed getting a death sentence, and he was sent to McAllister for life, and Bonnie Davis was also sentenced to life. But Oklahoma has some weird laws up there. Prisoners could actually get leaves of absences from prison.
Wow.
So, you know, this is kind of a screwed up deal. But now, when Fred got out of the prison in Kansas, his buddy Alvin Karpus, who had become his cellmate at Kansas State Penitentiary, well, when Fred was released, he was paroled in 1931 in May. And Karpus was paroled a short time thereafter. So Karpus, because he was Canadian, his real name was Alvin Karpovitz. His teacher just wrote his name down as Alvin Karpus, and it stuck. But he was known as Old Creepy. Because one time when he was arrested, one of the people who seen him, in, I guess on the lineup or whatever, made the comment that he looked creepy. So that nickname, he is a young man, though. He's in his 20s. But the name stuck. Everybody's got to call him Old Creepy. So he's always known as Creepy Karpus. But when Alvin got out in May of 31, he went down to Tulsa. They went and started knocking off banks and stuff, and they made a little trip up into West Plains, Missouri. Well, they shot and killed a sheriff up there. And they escaped, and when they raided their hideout, they found pictures of them, their mother, and they made some wanted posters out. This is the only time, or the very first mention of in any police communique of Ma Barker. And her boyfriend was a fellow named Arthur Dunlop. Of course, they mentioned him too. And they offered a big reward mainly for Barker and Karpus in connection with mm-hmm. the murder of Sheriff Roy Kelly. Well, they escaped to, from there, they went to St. Paul, Minnesota, and got in with the underworld figures up there.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about St. Paul, it was a gangster sanctuary city. You know, we hear about today. You know, they talk about sanctuary cities today. Well, St. Paul was basically a sanctuary city for every criminal in the country. They had something what was called the layover agreements. And they were allowed to stay there and not be molested by the police as long as they paid a percentage of whatever they took in from their criminal activity. And they, as long as they didn't do any committing crimes within the city limits of St. Paul. So they would go out like Minneapolis and the surrounding areas, commit their crimes, the robberies, and they would escape back to St. Paul, and nothing was done to them.
Wow.
And that was called the layover agreement. And it had been put in place by the police chief in the 1920s, John J. O'Connor. And after he left office, of course, he died about 1928. He left office in 24. And their so-called self-appointed godfather of St. Paul was a fellow named Dapper Dan Hogan. Well, he ran a place called the Blue Lantern, or no, the Green Lantern Saloon. Of course, now, then Prohibition come along. Well, of course, now he could openly sell booze there, but it became a speakeasy. And in 28, Dapper Dan gets blown up in his car.
Yeah.
And they never found out really who did it, but they suspect it was his business partner, Harry Sawyer. So Harry Sawyer pretty well took over the crime syndicate there in St. Paul. And it was him who set the Barkers up and Alvin Karpis with their newfound business.
Wow.
So they would hide out there in St. Paul, and he would help them help plan their robberies and stuff. So it kind of went from there. Well, apparently there was a certain banker that Sawyer didn't like. And that heard them complain about this guy for a long time. But one day, he come to him. He says, "Boys, how would you like to do a kidnapping?" And they, you know, they needed money, and he went over the details. And their first victim was a fellow named William Ham. And Ham was the CEO of the Ham Brewery Company,
right,
as one of the largest brewers in that area. Now, he had made a deal with the government to sell beer with 3.2 or 3.5% alcohol content. I think it's 3.2,
yeah.
which pretty much made Bremer, I mean not Bremer, but that was later, Ham, one of the richest guys in St. Paul. So they snatched him and held him for $100,000 ransom. So that went up without a hitch. I mean, they got their money and split it with everybody involved, and it wasn't long after that. Sawyer kept griping about his banker that screwed him on a deal on some bonds or something or other, and. So the next victim, kidnapping victim, was a fellow named Bremer. So they kidnapped Bremer. And the bad thing about it, this was, Bremer's daddy was a close personal friend of President Roosevelt.
Ooh.
And they crossed the line with this one because this brought the feds in big time after him. And all they wanted $200,000 for that robbery. Well, they marked all the bills, and they took Bremer to the same town, Bensenville, Illinois, that they had taken him. So they committed federal crime by taking a kidnap victim across state lines.
Mm-hmm.
Just a year before, they had passed the Lindbergh Law, where the federal government would come in, and the event of a kidnapping where the person was taken across state lines, it was some sort of a weird twist on the Commerce Act.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and see, when Dillinger stole Sheriff Holly's car when he escaped from West Point, or when he escaped from jail in Crown Point, Indiana, with a wooden gun, he took off in Sheriff Holly's car across the Illinois state line, and that brought the feds in because he violated the Commerce Act.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with Bremer and the Ham kidnappings, they had taken these men across state line in Illinois and held them in Bensonville. So they brought the feds in.
Mm-hmm.
They marked all the money with the Bremer kidnapping. And so they spent the rest of the time running from the feds. Eventually, they caught up with Fred Barker, and he had his mother with him, in Oklawaha, Florida. And on the 16th of February, no, 16th of January, 1935, 13 federal agents were involved in the largest gun battle in the history of the FBI.
Wow.
Ed left, Fred dead, and his mother was caught in crossfire. Well, this was bad news for Hoover, because this woman had no criminal record. And her, you know, it was more or less for her was guilt by association. The gang carried Ma Barker with them about everywhere they went. But Hoover, in order to cover his ass, he invented this myth that she was the brains of the whole outfit.
Sure.
That she had a gangster school in Tulsa where she trained all the worst gangsters in the country how to rob banks and kidnap people and all this other stuff. And it was all a bunch of crap. What a bit of truth to it. But Hoover did not want to catch flack over killing an unarmed grandmother. Her mother, well, she wanted to grab me off. Well, yeah, she was. Because Lloyd, when he got out of prison, well, he had, even, you know, she was eventually a grandmother, but it was after she died. But anyway, back to the story. He didn't want to catch the same flack that he had caught in the aftermath of the Little Bohemia raid in Wisconsin, the Manitowish Waters, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
April 1934. They had the Dillinger gang cornered, and it was just one huge fiasco. The gang escaped. It left a constable seriously wounded. It left a civilian dead. Another civilian seriously wounded. And left Hoover with egg on his face, more or less.
Yeah.
The public wanted Hoover's head on a silver platter. They wanted the Bureau of Investigation. Of course, at that time, it was called, it wasn't called the FBI. It was called Division of Investigation. They wanted it shut down because they seen Hoover as incompetent. And he was getting a bunch of people killed needlessly and not catching the people he was after. So yeah. he wanted to avoid that sort of bad publicity. So he invented this whole story that Ma Barker was the brains of the whole outfit. Harvey Bailey, who was more or less the dean of bank robbers back then, everybody knew Harvey Bailey. Bailey ran with the Barkers. He said that Ma Barker couldn't plan breakfast, let alone plan a bank robbery. That when they were in discussing the bank robbery, she'd be in the other room listening to Amos and Andy or listening to hillbilly music on the radio or doing crossword puzzles. And Carpus, he says, we kept her, whether she was aware of it or not, she was camouflaged for us. Because we would take travel as a mother and her sons, walked a little more innocent.
too.
And she took no part in the robberies.
Before we lose track, sir, where can we find your book online? I apologize for asking earlier.
What is that now? I can barely hear you.
Where can we find your books online? Or can we?
Okay, my book is The Barker Carpus Gang, An American Crime Family. It is on Amazon.com.
Outstanding.
And there's also a link on my Amazon page to my Kindle ebook version. So I have both as a paperback and on Kindle.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, I think the story with Matt Barker is absolutely fascinating, especially how they changed the story for film. Can you mention a little bit about that, please?
Excuse me?
The films that they made of the gang.
Oh, yeah. Shelley Winters played Ma Barker in a just really horrible movie called Bloody Mama in 1970. And it was just so far removed from reality that it's sickening.
Yeah.
I hate that movie.
I like the one, I think, with Angie Dickinson. It was much better done.
Yeah. Now, that one, that was really loosely based on the Barkers. And, yeah, that was a pretty good, that was a pretty decent movie. It's been a very long time since I've seen it.
Yeah, me too. I think I'll have to rewatch it. Because, you know, Angie Dickinson was a younger Angie Dickinson, and they took advantage of the fact that she was an attractive female.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they're, to me, I always like how we change American crime stories and American myth.
Uh-huh.
Be it Bonnie and Clyde or Dillinger and, you know, the Barker guy.
Yeah. Actually, the Barkers, she filled, Ma Barker filled her boys' heads full of stories about Jesse James and how he was like a Robin Hood sort of figure who would steal from the rich and give the poor. Of course, that, you know, that was urban legend. That's what story she was brought up with. She was like about, she was born in 1873.
Mm-hmm.
So she wasn't quite 10 years old yet when Jesse was killed.
Right.
But she was heartbroken.
Right, but that heart.
Because
whole,
they were
whole,
seen as heroes.
They were. Especially in the Ozarks, they're seen as heroes because you know the Civil War was not kind to the Ozarks. Was not kind to the Ozarks either during the war or afterwards. It's interesting too how nothing starts. You know, it all has its backstory. But what I need to do, sir. The little English lady tells me it's time to let you go, which I apologize because, again, the show goes fast. I'm going to have to bring you on again because there's lots of elements to this crime family I have questions on. May I be able to do so, say, in a couple of weeks?
Sure. Sounds good.
I'll say. Again, sir, I appreciate your time with giving us some basic information on the family, and we'll be talking to you soon about which is I and others have. Thank you very, very much.
I've been glad to talk to you.
Pleasure's mine, sir. Yeah. Bye-bye. What a nice guest. It's always nice to talk to me from the South because it's so nice and kind on the phone, and I really, 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 really appreciate that. So we'll figure out a nice time we can bring him back on. We'll bring him back on. So I have questions. I'm sure there's more of the story that he liked to explain to us that we're not able to cover in the short amount of time that we had today. But everybody out there, I really, really appreciate it. And remember, you want to go and get your T-shirt now of Cocaine Bear before Cocaine Bear comes to make sure you have one. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to the show. I appreciate you all. Talk to you all later. Bye-bye.